You are listening to the PT and the Gib Dog podcast, episode 50. For this very special 50th episode, join your two co-hosts as they physically and mentally prepare for the start of the NBA season at Cityside Bar and Grill. Get ready for some Celtics and NBA talk, a trip down memory lane about top sporting moments while they were at BC, before closing with quick thoughts on the undefeated Pats. Let's do this. All right, we're officially doing episode 50. I know it's a little bit delayed, but we wanted to get together in person. We wanted to have a good, you know, hour, 90-minute time carved out to talk about what the important matters of the day are. The NBA tip-off, the Celtics season. We're here in person at Cityside Bar and Grill. Shout out Cityside, being a great patron for us here. Have a little background noise, but you know what? You're going to deal with it. We're going to deal with it. It's going to be cool.
The last time we did one of these, Pat, the Patriots had a new shiny toy wide receiver.
It was Antonio Brown.
And guess what? Today, as we record one of these, they also have a new, brand new, shiny new toy of a wide receiver. But how much that has changed since the last time we talked.
I know. I honestly don't love having the, like, Antonio Brown is a Patriot as the most recent podcast. So clearly there's a wide receiver gap for our 7-0 Patriots. But I think they're holding their own. But we're here. We're doing it in person. Episode 50. It's been a fun podcast journey the last 2.5 years. And we started the night before the 2007 NBA draft. Actually, the night of, because we were going. Jason Tatum, number 3 pick in the draft. We were on record talking about the Celtics should take Tatum instead of Josh Jackson.
Which was a great choice. Who does Josh Jackson even play for?
He got traded, right?
He got traded to the Grizzlies, right?
I think he's at Memphis.
Memphis took him, right? Because they had nothing else to lose.
Yeah, I mean, not a good situation. Anyways, now we're here. Season for the Celtics starts in an hour and a half, so we're going to talk some Celtics. We're going to talk some NBA. We're going to reflect a little bit about BC. We have a few special wrinkles to make this episode 50 a special one. Pump for this. But I guess let's dive right in. Let's start with the Celtics. And it's been a long offseason. So me and you, we were at the last game that the Celtics played at the TD Garden. Game 4, Milwaukee Bucks. We left a little early. I think we left with 30 seconds left.
We did.
But we left after Kyrie Irving left before we did. I think Kyrie left before we did.
Yes, he did.
His last game.
I don't think got on the plane to Milwaukee for game 5, I don't think.
He certainly wasn't there mentally. So I think from that moment on, we were very much in a good riddance mood. I don't think we were sad to see him go. We may have had some speculations around maybe him staying, but like, this is a new team. We're excited about the team, and I'm pretty excited going into the season.
Yeah, I mean, the Celtics are fun again is true. I don't know how much of the preseason you watched. I watched
a little bit.
I watched the first 3 preseason games, and then maybe a quarter and a half of the Cleveland game. And the half of a quarter I watched was the one where Carson Edwards hit the 8 threes in 6 minutes. I've never seen anything like that. That was crazy. Ever. And we'll get to him a little bit more as when we talk more about the roster. But it is more of a Brad Stevens team, a team that, you know, people have obviously lowered the expectations on them for sure. It's tough to lower expectations on a team that, you know, replaced its all-NBA second team point guard that left in free agency with an all-NBA third teamer in Kemba Walker. So, I mean, they did pretty good in replacing Irving. But are the Celtics less talented on paper than they were last year, you know, at this time? Yes, they probably are. But I would argue that they might be a deeper team now. Not so much top-heavy talent, but just a little bit more deeper as far as the bench goes. But some of that depth is going to be really relied upon by some of these young guys, Carson Edwards included. Grant Williams, we'll get to him.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a team to be excited about. I liked what I saw in the preseason. A lot more ball movement that you saw more so in that playoff run a couple years ago when, Irving and Hayward were both out. I think you're going to see a lot more of that. That's actually a key to tonight's success against the Sixers, I think, if they move the basketball. You saw a lot more of that in the preseason. And you have someone in Kemba Walker, I think it might, you know, who's you know, been normally, not normally, but for the entirety of his career, been a ball dominant player. I think he's excited to not be as ball dominant and have guys like Hayward Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown in his fresh new 4-year contract extension.
$109 million contract.
Surrounding him. I think he's excited for it. And I think you're going to see a lot of times where Kemba Walker's playing off the ball and maybe Gordon Hayward has the ball in his hands. I just think the pieces fit a lot better this year. You can tell Brad Stevens is obviously in a better place coaching this team. You can just tell by him, you know, watching his demeanor on the sidelines. And just it just seems like a little bit of a, you know, something's been lifted off of their shoulders collectively. Now, you know, losing Al Horford, I think, is something they're still going to have to figure out. You know, the center position is a big, big question mark. You know, we'll see how long they can piece it together, and it may get to a point in the season where if they feel they need to address it, they can be a trade. I mean, they still have first-round pick capital to do that if they really feel the need to. But we'll see. I'm excited to see what they do. If they lose tonight, is it all over? No. I think you're looking at least a top 14 in the East.
Yeah, and if we talk about the key additions and key subtractions, I mean, you hit on some of them, right? So Kyrie Irving on to Brooklyn, replaced with Kemba Walker from Charlotte, and you know, you're definitely losing some of the peak talent there. I mean, Kyrie was someone who could win a game for you. I think Kemba is someone who, from like a team perspective, definitely fits in with this group better than Kyrie did. Definitely a talented player in his own right. Like, you don't make third team All NBA if you're not talented. And
I'll do another dogfish, please.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you. We're gonna keep this on the podcast.
we are.
So, as my train of thought gets.
Shout out to Sam Adams at Dogfish Head IPA for co-producing this podcast along with us.
Exactly. So Kemba is somebody who can win games for you as well, and he definitely beat the Celtics single-handedly a few times, I think, as we watched that.
Well, there was one game last year where the Celtics had, like, the 20-point lead or whatever it was, and it just evaporated. And it was largely because they couldn't contain Kemba Walker. I think it was one of those, like, the beginning of the end for how you do last year's team with Kyrie Irving going off on the coaching staff.
Kyrie stopped defending Kemba. It's
like, and then blamed on the coaching staff for the defensive schemes that they were running at him. But, that, you know, so you can argue Kemba Walker played a hand in getting Kemba Walker to the Celtics by kind of, you know, igniting the beginning of the end of last year's Celtics team in that game in Charlotte.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. And So you sub in Kemba, you sub out Kyrie, other key losses, Al Horford, that's going to be tough, but he is getting older. We're going to spend more time on that shortly, either in this segment or the Sixers segment. As your views on the Sixers is well documented. Marcus Morris is gone, and again, I think he's someone who had his spurts, but in general was a ball-dominant, poor-shooting, long-twos type player who, when the whole team was hurt, the end of 18, he was great.
So basically what you're saying is everything that Marcus Morris is good at will fit in perfectly
with the Knicks,
as a member of the New York Knicks. He can do that and get away with all of that.
He's going to average 22 on 20 shots a game and have fun with that.
Bobby Portis and Marcus Morris, your 2019-2020 New York Knicks.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
The last key loss, Aaron Baines.
That's the one you wish they had back.
It's going to be a sneaky, painful one. Because when we talk about front court depth, it's definitely lacking at the center position, and you can't really fault Baines. Like, he wants to win now. Not that the Celtics group isn't competitive right now, but did they also have to make the math work?
Your choice is basically Aaron Baines was on this roster, or you bring Kemba Walker out of the max contract. They had to get rid of him in order to create the max slot for Kemba. So I think you, as hard as that is, you make that trade any day of the week.
So some tough losses, but some really interesting additions. So you have Enes Kanter, super polarizing, rebound machine, doesn't really play defense, which is going to be something that certainly Stevens is going to have to figure out this year in terms of how to defend without a lot of defensive presence.
Someone who it's going to be very tough for them to close games with him at center. It's going to be very... Just defensively, that's going to be a very tough, and especially in a game like tonight when you've got Al Horford and Joel Embiid on the other side. I'm not necessarily sure that's going to work. Someone who you thought would be the starting center coming in, I'm not necessarily sure that's the case either. It's going to be, I think it's Tyser Williams before it's him. It might even be who, by the way, I've been mispronouncing Vincent Poirier's name wrong all summer.
It's Poirier, right?
That's the part that I've gotten right, but it's the pronunciation of his first name that I've been getting wrong. I watched a couple of Brad season post-game press conferences and preseason. I know that's really bad and sad. It's pronounced Vincent.
Vincent. Okay, en français.
Yeah.
So
it's Vincent Poirier. And that's exactly how Brad Stevens said it. His name sounded like French. But
yeah. What is French? I think he is French.
I'm just going to stick with Vinny Perrier.
Vinny
Perrier. Vinny can we call him that?
You can call him whatever you want as long as he can play defense. So, other additions. These Celtics have 4 first-round picks. We're going to see a few of them. We're going to see Grant Williams, who I think we'd both like. I'm not sure we're going to see Romeo Langford, at least until the end of the season. But we spent a lot of time in Maine.
And injuries aside, I think that was the case. Even if it was healthy, I think you weren't going to see a lot of them.
You already touched on our new Eddie House 2.0, which really excites me to have someone with that sharp shooting mentality on the team. That game was crazy, by the way.
I just hope some people aren't putting the expectations beyond that on this kid. That's all we need him to be. And to put any expectations beyond an Eddie House on steroids, which is what I've been calling him for a while. But he's definitely a guy who can affect a game.
Yep.
You know, I think a point was made that he's a guy who can change the momentum of a game coming off the bench. And last year, did the Celtics really have someone that could change the momentum coming off the bench? Not really.
Not really. Would just miss shots. But
in order to change the momentum, I mean, you could say maybe Marcus Smart when he was coming off the bench from a defensive standpoint. But you need that offensive, you know, firepower, that offensive threat. And Carson Edwards is that guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think initially maybe, like tonight, does Brad Wanamaker come off the bench before Carson Edwards? Yes, probably, because they're really pushing this Brad Wanamaker thing, who's a solid pro, who's the oldest guy in the Celtics, by the way, at 29
no
years
way.
Old. No way. He is. 29 years
older
old. Brad Wanamaker is the oldest.
Older than Kemba?
Yep. Older than Kemba.
The entire Celtics is in their 20s?
I don't doubt Mike Gorman. He told me that on one of the preseason games. This is what you get from watching preseason basketball.
Wow. Fun facts. Thank you for doing that. I watched the Carson Edwards 3-point barrage highlights. That was amazing.
But Carson Edwards is going to pass Brad Wanamaker in that rotation. I know he's not as true of a ball handler as a Wanamaker is, but I don't want Carson Edwards handling the ball.
Well, him and Kemba cannot be on the floor at the same time either because they're both 5'11".
Nor will they be.
No, I don't.
And Carson's on the floor with Smart. Smart can be your ball handler.
That's fair.
If he's on the floor with even Gordon Hayward, Gordon Hayward's the ball handler.
Yeah.
Or Kemba's the, you know, he's not. It's Hayward or Smart as opposed to Edwards. So I think Edwards is probably, you know, he's the one who's going to jump off the stat sheet at you more so as the one who's going to be the impact.
Yeah.
But let's talk a little bit about Grant Williams. What do you think about his one?
Oh, man. He's someone who excites me in terms of not just what he can do today, but I think he just has this capacity to learn. And I see him as someone who, you know, he's an undersized 4. I don't know if he's going to play the 4 or the 3. Probably the 4. I guess it's tough when...
You could see him as a small ball 5.
You could potentially see him as a 5. In the Draymond type of role, right? Someone who can see the floor, someone who can pass the ball. He can hit threes. He has extended his range. He did not show that at Tennessee, but he is now starting to show that. I don't need him to do that, but he can spread the floor. And he has that Marcus Smart hustle mentality, too. And seems like a really good guy in terms of like a team culture perspective. So I'm really excited about what he can bring to the table. And he seems like a good Stevens-type player, too, which I'm excited about as well. And, again, that's why they used a first-round pick on him. But somebody who can kind of deliver today, whereas the Romeo Langford pick is more about, like, potential was developing him in Maine this year. And, you know, in a year or two, hopefully he starts to deliver. So some interesting first-round picks. And, again, this was... There was a lot of talk around, like, should we trade 3 of these picks to get one guy? I mean, honestly, given the market where it was, I'm personally comfortable with the decision that they make, where you get a guy like Langford who's got potential, Williams who can deliver today, Edwards who's a 3-point machine once he gets going, and we haven't even talked about our unsigned free agent, Taco Fall, as well as,
Javonte Green.
Javonte
he's
Green,
not a true
right.
rookie because he's...
Yeah. But another player who can deliver for
who
the Celtics.
So. Very much impressed. And like, you could argue probably like two-way is the most ready of all of them for the NBA game. But
because of the glutton of wing players that are ahead of him, Tatum, yeah. Brown, Hayward, he's obviously not going to see the floor as much as you yeah. think. But in yeah. the event of an injury, you've got a guy who I really believe in, Javante Green, who's NBA ready from an athletic standpoint on the defensive end of the floor. Danny yeah. Ainge has been touting him a lot as a Tony Allen type defensively, and I can see that. And then you see his athleticism just when he finishes at the rim. And yes, it's been garbage time against the Hornets
yep.
and against the Cavaliers. But the guy has a certain level of athleticism that we haven't seen from anyone in a Celtic jersey in a long time.
Yeah. So as Mike had said before, like, the depth is really interesting. But let's bring it back to the folks who are going to be playing much of the game. Celtics won 49 games last year. Again, losing a superstar in Kyrie, replacing him with a few folks. Horford's a tough loss. What's it going to take for them to win 49 or even 50-plus games this year? As you think about the roster, as you think about this team coming together, I guess, what are the things that have to happen, and how realistic do you think that actually is, winning 50-plus this year?
You need Jason Tatum to assert himself, kind of take that leap that we were expecting him to take from year one to year two. And yes, while the statistics, you know, were better in year two than they were in year one, it's just because people had such these high expectations for him. And I think he's saying all the right things about how he's adjusted his game, where, I mean, his mid-range shot isn't going to go away. But I think he's obviously listened to the importance of getting to the basket, getting to the yeah. free throw line. That's a big thing. If the Celtics are going to win 50-plus games and be a third seed in the Eastern Conference, it's going to take him becoming that number two guy, you know, behind Walker, almost like a 1-1.
Can he be a one guy?
A one guy. It's almost like a 1-1A situation with those two guys. And then if you're talking a situation where Jaylen Brown and Gordon Hayward are your third and fourth, you know, that's a pretty good... I mean, I'm also not ready to put these ridiculous expectations that everyone's putting on Gordon Hayward. Yes, he does look better. He does look like a different player in the games that I've watched. He's much more assertive. Yep. He seems much, much more comfortable in his own skin, much more comfortable out there on the basketball floor. But let's see him actually do it before we start, you know, talking yep. about it and say that Utah Hayward is back. And I don't even need full Utah Hayward. I mean, I need like 80% of Utah Hayward, you know,
yeah.
you know, for this team. And if he does that, they're going to be in really, really good shape.
Yeah. Let's touch on Brown. So completely agree with Tatum. And a lot of it's like getting to the line, high efficiency shots, let the game come to him. And I mean, you could argue that Kyrie kind of stunted his development a little bit. So it'd be interesting to have someone who is a trained facilitator like Kemba, who, you know, maybe didn't necessarily show off that facilitating prowess at Charlotte when, you know, he had no one around him. He had Bismack Biyombo and a bunch of complete shit players.
Frank Kaminsky was on that team, and he's pretty good, right? Because didn't Michael Jordan turn down 4 first-round draft picks? Danny Ainge offered him 4 first-round picks for that pick because Danny was going to take Justice Winslow.
He did.
And he turned it down because he wanted to take Frank Kaminsky.
He did. That did happen.
Oh, wait, that's the same guy who just gave Terry Rozier $20 million a year coming off the season he had.
I'm just happy we're not in Charlotte. We would not be doing the podcast. Let's touch on Jaylen Brown for a second. When you saw the news, because we were texting the day before, I think, about, or at least I was texting about contract year Jaylen, and it's like, okay, let's prove it, Jaylen. He'll be a restricted free agent next year. Celtics can probably match. So it was interesting to me to see that they decided to go with the extension. I guess what were your thoughts seeing that?
I thought it was going to happen. Like, I had a feeling they were going to come to some sort of agreement with him. You know, they had that report last week that he turned down 4 years, $80 million. I listened to Danny Ainge.
It's kind of a slap in the face offer, by the way.
Which, but what I'm about to say is I don't think that's truly an offer that they put forth.
Yeah.
Because the next day I was listening to Ainge's interview on Toucher and Rich, and he basically said that whoever reported that was definitely had some misinformation. And then he said that negotiations were going well. Jaylen Brown actually hired an agent. Up until about 2-3 weeks ago, he didn't have an agent. Now he had representation. Yeah. So you had a feeling that it's what he wanted, it's what the Celtics wanted, and he felt the need to bring an agent into the fold. And I think once that happened, I had a feeling they were going to come to something. I think it really isn't for the 4-115 that they said.
Yeah.
About 12 of that is, you know, in bonuses. So it's really, it's guaranteed 4-103. So I think we were talking like 4-100. Yeah, you do that. And that's essentially what they came for. And there's incentives for him too. They'll probably get to it if he gets to them.
Yeah.
That's a good thing for the Celtics. So yeah. I don't have a problem with it. It's a team, we're going to be over the cap.
Yeah.
The only way we're going to be able to, we're only going to be able to retain our own guys,
yeah.
you know, moving forward. So you got to, and someone would have thrown a lot of money at him next offseason. The Knicks,
yeah.
the Hawks. I mean, granted, not teams that are a threat to win anything, but teams that have cap space.
Yeah.
yeah. And it was the right move, I think, on the Celtics' part.
Yeah, I think they had to. I mean, with when Kyrie transitioned and they signed Kemba to the 3+ player option, it was kind of like, good, thank you.
Very good.
Perfect.
It was kind of a we're gonna win with our own guys, right? Like these are the guys we're gonna do battle with, and it's a bet on Jaylen Brown being the Jaylen Brown in the 2018 playoffs, where he was the best player on the floor against a Milwaukee Bucks team that had Giannis, and did extremely well in the Cavs series too, as a best player on a team that was a quarter away from going to the Eastern Conference Finals. Definitely regressed. Again, a candidate. I don't want to hate on Kyrie too much. Actually, I kind of do. Him and Kyrie clearly clashed in a huge way. I know Jackie Mack wrote about it. And Jaylen's someone who is bashes himself as an intellectual. He's talking at Harvard. He's talking at MIT.
He went to Cal.
He went to Cal. Smart guy. And he had issues with Kyrie, and I think it's going to be healthy for him to not have Kyrie on this team anymore and be working with Kemba. So, but you also hope the USA national team, hopefully that helped him as well in terms of just getting his preparation in a good spot. So I would agree. I think I see Tatum. I see a gradual improvement from Tatum. I don't see him as an all-star this year, but I think that the team success does depend on Jaylen Brown making that leap to a guy who can comfortably score, doesn't have to be 20 a game, but in that 18 range every single night. He'll be average, I think, an assist and a half per game last year or something like that. Like, he's got to move the ball better, and I see him doing this in this type of offense. And he's already a very good defender, so I'm excited about the Jaylen Brown development and looking forward to him starting to showcase it tonight.
And you're going to see that early. Like, I think, you know, a lot of us thought maybe, will they start Tatum, Hayward, and Brown all together in the starting lineup? It looks like that's the way they're going. That's the way they all started in all the preseason games that they played. You know, maybe that changes. You know, we kind of thought maybe Marcus Smart might be the starter, but it looks like they're committed to Smart as that sixth man off the bench.
I like Smart off the bench.
Which I think that's a good role for him. You know, you got to think logically when you've got four, I don't want to say all-stars, but you got four, you know, the four is Walker, Tatum, Hayward, Brown.
Yeah.
You think logically someone's got to be left out of that mix or isn't going to, someone out of those four is going to be unhappy. You know, you just think three is almost too many. Four is definitely
well, Hayward doesn't need shots. I think Hayward's okay. He doesn't
right.
need shots.
So I think that's what it is. Well, a lot of people would maybe say, like, oh, Brown's the one who's going to be the one that's going to be, you know, unhappy in this situation. Now it doesn't really matter as much as he's getting paid. You know, he's got his money already. But, you know, put the money aside, which you just said is spot on. You took the words right out of my mouth. That, you know, Hayward is the one who can be more the facilitator. And Hayward's going to impact on this team is going to be when he's got a Tatum, a Brown, a Walker to share the basketball with. And he'll score when you need him to, too.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people would probably think, oh, Brown's the one who's going to have to kind of take a step back to those three.
Yeah.
But not necessarily sure that's the case.
It'll be interesting. And again, this team's going to take some time to get together, right? It's going to be probably a couple months before they're really kind of gelling. I mean, the Celtics team 2 years ago with Kyrie when they started off 16-2, like, that does not happen usually. You remember the LeBron-Miami team? They started out 9-8. Like, that is... That's the type of start, at least I foresee. I haven't looked at the early schedule, but, like, it's going to take some time to figure this out. When you,
no, it's tough. They have a West Coast trip right off the bat.
Yeah, they're going out west, and we got to work through that, right? So, what do we do about the center position? That's what's giving me the most concern. That's what's keeping me up at night. You have Daniel Tice, who knows the Brad Cism system, okay defensively, okay offensively, can hit a three, but, you know, very much replacement level. You have Cantor, again, rebounding machine, Matador defense, can't defend anybody. You have Bob Williams, second year, still very unpolished, can sky and dunk. He's got that Capella-like athleticism, but still not like fully learned the system. And I think he will suffer from not having someone like Horford around to really show him the way. I guess how do we, and then Poirier, who I don't know anything about. I now know how to pronounce his first name, which is good. So what do we do about that, especially when you have the Embiids of the world? How are we going to defend a team like that?
First off, I think it's going to be Tice, at least from the get-go. First preseason game, it was Williams, but it was because Tice was hurt. Next preseason game, Tice started right away. And Stevens even admitted to why it will be Tice at the beginning, is because he's the one who's been around the longest. And that's also, Tice is the guy who has the most versatility defensively. You know, Brad Stevens loves to switch 1 through 5. Tice is the only guy where you can actually, you know, attempt to do that. So I think, yes, it will be Tice starting early on. Depending how Cantor plays, I see Cantor more as the guy coming off the bench because he's kind of some instant offense for you.
Yeah.
You know, with that second unit. It'll all come down to if I think Robert Williams, you know, takes a leap that they hope he will. Maybe he becomes the guy and supplants Tice at some point down the line. I know he's fighting a little concussion thing early on here.
Yeah.
He's cleared to play tonight, but I don't think he'll start. It's going to be it's the position that's the biggest question mark. And one other guy, just so we touch on them all, Poirier. You know, Brad Stevens admitted he was the guy. He came in. He didn't come into the starting training camp. He obviously had his national team commitments playing for France, you know, in the World Cup. So not to say that he's behind, but he's probably the one who's still trying to fully engross himself in what the Celtics are doing. You know, Brad Stevens has admitted that a few times right now. Once he gets up to speed, I mean, I highly doubt that Vincent Poirier came here to sit on the bench. You know, you look at his stats in the EuroLeague, they're very, very good. His rebounding numbers are through the roof. You know, they obviously saw a role for him. Now, to ask for it to happen right away this season is, you know, I think a little unrealistic. It might be something more of a, you know, talk to me in December, January, once he gets more comfortable. I also think it'll depend on who the matchup is every night.
Yeah.
You know, and that's another thing. So, a lot of question marks with that position, but we'll see. Tonight, I'm a little worried. I mean, as you and I talked about Daniel Tice last year, like, as much as we liked him.
Yeah.
We rendered him virtually useless in the Milwaukee series, and he was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now tonight you're going with a team with Joel Embiid and Al Horford. I mean, heck, you could argue that maybe Semi Ojeleye and Marcus Smart are better matchups for those two guys than Daniel Tice is. So we'll see.
Maybe Embiid will hang out at the 3-point line the whole game, and then we won't have to worry about him. Yeah, we'll see. All right, so I guess prediction. I guess where do you see, in terms of rough win total, in terms of seed in the East, I guess where do you see the Celtics ending up?
49 last year. I could see them having more wins than last year. They could definitely be a better regular season team than they were last year. I think that certainly will happen.
Certainly?
Yeah.
Okay.
I do. I'm pretty confident they're about 50-51 wins. I know it's only one or two more than what they had, but it's still cracking the 50 threshold. And I think that's good enough for third in the Eastern Conference. You know, watching Toronto last night, and I guess we'll get the rest of the league, you know, people forget, you know, I think you and me, and, you know, more so you, tell me if I'm wrong, kind of writing Toronto off a little bit now that Leonard's...
Oh, no. They're my surprise team.
You're your surprise team.
They're my surprise team.
You did in one of our pods talk about how you think, I had to talk you into that they were still going to be a playoff team. And you're like, oh, yeah, I guess I could see that in the East. We'll go back and look. You were down on Toronto.
I changed my mind.
Okay, good. I'm glad you smartened up.
I changed my mind. I like Toronto now. I like
Because if you ask me who's the biggest threat after Milwaukee and Philadelphia, who's the biggest threat for number 3 in the East to the Celtics? It's not the Pacers. It's not the Miami Heat.
It's not the Nets.
It's not the Orlando Magic. It's not the Brooklyn Nets. It's the Toronto Raptors. It's still a very good basketball.
I think the Raptors will be the 3. That's my surprise.
Okay, well, sorry to spoil it. We'll talk about it more.
No, let's get into it. Let's get into it.
But I see the Celtics as a 3rd or 4th seed in the East.
Just similar to last year.
you know, and they make it to the Eastern Conference semifinals, you know, they and then, you know, I think it depends on the matchup in the second round. If they end up with Philly or Milwaukee, who they can get by. It'll all depend on where Milwaukee or Philly finishes one or two.
I like it. I like it. Let's go into surprises and we can talk about our playoff predictions. So we kind of jumped into my surprise. I actually have changed my tune, apparently.
You did? Go back and look at it. Call me crazy.
No, I think probably right.
I think at first I said they're fifth in the East. You go, no. When I go, Pat, look at the East. And you're like, okay, yeah, I think you're right. But I had to convince you of it a little bit.
And I didn't watch the game last night. I know they won it overtime against an understaffed Falcons team. But I know Lowry is dealing with injuries. But I think between Siakam, between Van Fleet, they still get Gasol. Their team that was pretty good before they got Kawhi. Now, granted, they had DeRozan, but I see Toronto maybe exceeding expectations. I see them as the 3 seed in the East, which I think is probably higher than most people have them going, and having a surprise season. I don't see them doing much in the playoffs, but if I had to go with my Eastern Conference surprise, I would pick Toronto. Who do you have as your East surprise?
They were going to be mine too, and I know this makes for terrible podcasting, terrible radio, but they seem to be the forgotten, you know, first, a lot of people talking about Indiana after Malcolm Brogdon, you know, and I think, you know, and obviously they locked up Domantas Sabonis, you know, long term, but they're still going to be without Victor Oladipo at least till the first of the year, or at least he won't be Victor Oladipo, maybe not even till the All-Star break. And then once he comes back and tries to integrate himself into an Indiana team that played pretty well without him last year, obviously the Celtics steamrolled in the playoffs. But as far as regular season team, the Pacers kind of kept their head above water after his injury. That was kind of the darling of the East to pick. Like, everybody watch out for Indiana. At the same time, people were forgetting about Toronto, though.
Yeah.
And I think that it's – I don't think it's close. I think your top four in the East are – and in no particular order – Sixers, Bucks, Celtics, Raptors, and then you've got the Miami Heat, I think, biting on, will be the 5th seed in the East. I really do think that they will be. And they could be a threat to finish, you know, in the top four, but they're the closest to those four teams. And then after that, Pat, I couldn't begin to tell you, I don't think.
It's pretty bad.
I can make some picks, but I could be wrong on all three.
The Detroit, Orlando cohort is a like Brooklyn, that group, Chicago even. Like
Orlando,
that group is tough. That group
Chicago,
is tough.
Yes, it's a very tough group.
That group's tough. All right, we'll stay with you because I live with my East surprise. I guess who is your East disappointment? Someone who underachieves. Are you going to go to Sixers now or wait till later for your Sixers rant?
No, because the Sixers will be a disappointment. It won't be enough of a disappointment that'll, you know, that people will consider it to be a disappointment,
okay,
if that makes any sense.
Kind of.
East disappointment. I mean, I don't want to say the Pacers because I basically just said it. Because I think, I don't want to call them a disappointment because I think people are putting too lofty of an expectation on them, you know, in the first place. I mean, a lot of people were high in Orlando. When Orlando went to the playoffs last year, you know, they ended up playing Toronto.
They beat Toronto in Game 1.
Game 1.
Game 1, yeah. Then they lost theirs.
Well, they beat the Celtics, like, pretty handily in one of the last regular season games of the year. Looked really good. They kept Vucevic. I mean, they kept a lot of the guys.
We thought Vucevic was going to go to the Celtics.
Or Lakers. I think I said the Lakers. Either way, I thought he was leaving.
Yeah.
He didn't play in the preseason game against the Celtics, but the Celtics, Pat, ran circles around that Magic team.
Yeah.
That had everybody playing, with the exception of Vucevic.
They also have a former number one overall pick on their team
and
now.
Markel Fultz, yes they do.
I'm not buying that.
No, I'm not either. And I don't think, you know, any of the expectations for the Magic was really, you know, tied to Markel Fultz at all. But I think that's a team that many people consider to be a playoff team in the East. And you look at the odds, yes, they probably are. But I think a team like the Magic could just as easily not make the playoffs as it is make the playoffs.
Okay.
I mean, they carried a lot of momentum going in the last end of last year's regular season. And kind of a pick that everyone thinks in a bad Eastern Conference could make some noise. But I think I'd have to go with the Magic.
Okay. You're going to love what I'm about to sell here.
Milwaukee Bucks.
I think I've done that one before, too. But I'm backing off.
All right, go ahead.
Brooklyn Nets are my pick to underachieve in the East. The Kyrie Irving experience, have fun with that. I think they had such a good system with the folks that they had between Dinwiddie and LeVert. They had Dudley flowing through that offense. They had Jared Allen. They were just Joe Harris. Like, they had such a good kind of crew of folks that all played so well. I mean, D'Angelo Russell, of course. Such a good team together, well coached, all that stuff. And now you throw Kyrie in for D'Angelo, which is an upgrade, but maybe not by as much as you think. You sub out the Jared Allen potential for freaking what's his name? The guy who was on the
DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah, he's a zero.
Part of the big three.
Yeah, have fun with that. He's a zero.
Big three of Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and DeAndre Jordan.
Durant's not playing this year, so you're betting on Caris LeVert and Spencer Dinwiddie continuing to grow, and also the ability to tolerate Kyrie Irving. I think this is a 500 team this year. I think it's a 500 team. I think it's a 7th seed, and I think they get spanked by the Bucks in the first round. Is my prediction. So they are not going to be anywhere close to the number 3 seed contention that some folks have them.
Selfishly, I'd like them to finish 6th, because then if the off chance the Celtics finish 3rd, then we get Kyrie Irving and the Nets in the first round of the playoffs, and tell me that would not be a lot of fun.
If we won, it would be fun.
It would force him to actually play a game. It might, playoff series against the Nets, Pat, might be the first time we see Kyrie Irving back in Boston in a Nets uniform.
Which is unfortunate, because I have tickets to the Nets game in February or March, and I think I'm already discounting the fact that he'll be playing. He'll have some flu-like symptoms, I think, that night, or it'd be a load management game for Kyrie. Let's flip to the West. I know we haven't talked a lot about the West. Who, any surprises in mind for teams you think are going to overachieve in the West?
It's tough to find an overachiever in the West, because I think you have, like, maybe 6 or 7 playoff locks out there. So it's tough to find an overachiever, so to speak. A team that's good, but just because given the shift of, you know, star power and everything, watch out for a team like Portland, you know, who made the run all the way to the Western Conference Finals. I know that's crazy to call a team that made the Western Conference Finals a surprise, but they're not really getting talked about very much.
They're not.
I mean, they have Dame Lillard, who is, you know, easily a top 10, maybe. I was playing like a top 5 player at times last year. Backcourt mate CJ McCollum. They replaced Enes Kanter with Hassan Whiteside
You'd rather have Dirk healthy, but
you would.
It's going to take some time.
You would. But as much as I hate to say this, because a guy like, because Kanter's on our roster now, you know, on the Celtics.
Yeah.
You kind of got to like Whiteside getting out of Miami, getting to a place in Portland.
Sure.
I think a guy who could definitely benefit from a change of scenery, you know, and probably better in that role for them, you know, with established stars like Lillard and McCollum. You know, I like that Portland team to make a little bit more noise than people are actually saying they're going to this year. They're definitely a playoff team. A team that could compete for a 4th or 5th in the West? Yeah, I think so. I think they could.
Yeah.
They're just—I think people are forgetting about them. They got to remember they made it to the Western Conference Finals. They got waxed by the Warriors, but they still got to the Western Conference.
They did.
Finals.
They did.
And I think people, you know, yes, the Lakers have gotten better. The Clippers have gotten better. Utah is the darling of the Western Conference. But people got to, I think, at the same time, remember what Portland did last year.
Yeah. I like that pick. My not so sleeper, but overachiever in the West, and I won't spend a lot of time talking about this, I think the Warriors are going to be good. I know it's
you're not on the Warriors miss the playoffs train?
No, I think they win 52 games, and I think they're a 3
There
seed.
Are more people that are Warriors don't make the playoffs than they actually do, at least when I've been listening around. I don't believe it either.
Draymond Green, D'Angelo Russell, Klay's missing the season. I know there's depth issues, but let's put it this way. This is a Steph proves who he is without Durant type season, and yes, he has to stay healthy. If you're betting on them to miss the playoffs, you're betting on him getting injured, which is possible, but he's been relatively reliable. I'm optimistic about the Warriors. I think they have a really strong year. I don't think they come out of the West. We'll talk about who comes out of the West shortly.
What are you guys doing?
I will do
another beer. Please,
yes.
Sure.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So Warriors are my pick to continue to achieve quite highly. So I see them as the three seed coming out of the West.
Really?
Yeah, I think they're gonna have a, I think they're gonna have a great year. This team knows how to win.
Yeah.
Draymond, I know he just got paid, but I actually think that helps him. And Steph is going to be an MVP. He's going to be the MVP this year. I think he tops Giannis for the MVP vote. So my West disappointment, I'll kick this one off. My pick is Utah. So I know you mentioned it's a darling, and that's why I immediately circled it as the place I'm going to go short on.
We talked about this in the summer. You thought I was going to pick the Jazz.
Did I?
And I kind of pulled back a little bit.
But yeah.
Go.
I mean, I was a big hashtag take note guy 2 years ago when they made their run. Did they make it to the Western Conference Finals? Or no,
semis.
They upset, was it OKC 2 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And I think they won a game or two against, was it Houston back then? But they couldn't get it done. All right. So there's just this hype train on Mike Conley just needs to end. I'm sorry, he was good in the grit and grind days like a decade ago. I don't see him getting a full season in. I don't see him as the differentiator to take the Jazz to the next level. I just don't. I'm not a big Mike Conley guy. I know they also got Bojan. Not a huge Bojan guy.
Boyan,
that's fine too. Donovan Mitchell tried to be the star of this USA basketball team. Didn't make the leap in my mind.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So we're looking at a roster of Donovan Mitchell, Gobert, who is quite good, right?
Yes.
Very, very, extremely good. Joe Ingles, okay, fine, whatever. You have Conley, you have Bojan, Quinn Snyder. Are we really in a world where like Quinn Snyder is this coaching savant? I think they underachieve.
He's got a contract extension. They think
well, I wouldn't assign that. so I see them 7th or 8th seed in the West and disappearing quite quietly as my West underachiever.
Wow.
Harsh words. Take note.
I didn't put that harsh of a thing on harsh of an outlook on the Jazz. I think in the summer I likened them to last year's Nuggets team, which had a great regular season but fizzled in the playoffs.
Yep.
And that's kind of something I see, too. The Jazz might have a really good regular season, but once they go up against the Clippers or, heck, even the Lakers, I don't see them getting past either one of those teams. That's where, like, them as a two, they're run, say they make the two seed in the West, their run comes to an end in the Western Conference semifinals.
I definitely don't see them as a two, but that's cool. Do you have any disappointment in your mind in the Western Conference? I mean, there's all these playoff locks that people are talking about, the Jazz included. I think there's going to be a little more noise than people expect, but we'll see.
It's tough to call them a disappointment because they still make the playoffs. I think the Los Angeles Lakers are going to finish like a 5 or 6 maybe in the West, just regular season-wise.
It's a health play.
I mean, they hinge so much on LeBron James and Anthony Davis himself. Has Davis looked otherworldly in a couple of the preseason games? Yes, he has.
Yeah.
The minute he has an injury, and just with his history, LeBron's coming off the first season of his career where he missed more games than he played. Just look at the rest of the makeup of that roster. You could argue their best backcourt right now is Rajon Rondo and Avery Bradley. And yes, Pat, in 2012 for the Celtics, that's fucking fantastic. But it's not in 2019. Not at all. You know? And Dwight Howard as your center? Like, they're just piecemealing together that center position.
Or JaVale or whatever.
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be Dwight Howard from the get-go. You look at the starting five of maybe Dwight Howard, Anthony Davis, LeBron James, Avery Bradley, Rajon Rondo.
It's not 2010 anymore.
It's not. Not to knock Avery Bradley. I love him as much as the next guy. But I'm just not sure they hold up in the regular season like people think they do. Now, if they're healthy going to the playoffs with a healthy LeBron and Anthony Davis, it doesn't matter what their seed is, they're a threat to get to the Western Conference Finals. But I think they're going to finish lower in the West seeding-wise than I think a lot of people are expecting them to.
I love how you just didn't even mention Kuzma because you're just so out on the Kuzma train. I love it.
Off the bench. He's coming off the bench, isn't he? Or is he starting?
do anything. He doesn't do anything.
I'll be honest, Pat. I wasn't awake at 10:30 last night, so I didn't see who started for the Lakers.
He's still hurt.
He's still hurt? Okay. Yeah. And he'll probably come off the bench when he comes back.
He's too much of a one-dimensional player.
And he should. He should come off the bench.
Yeah.
Because just after LeBron and AD, and then if, say, he's number three, what else they got?
Yeah. I mean, it's Danny Green, who actually played quite well last night. Right. But it's Danny Green.
It's Danny Green. It's Alex Caruso.
Cool. Yeah. Kendall Caldwell Pope.
Yep.
Yeah, this is the guy from the Warriors. I forget his name. Yeah, it's not...
Oh, we got JaVale McGee.
Yeah.
No. I mean, they're going to be... They'll be players for anyone... No, they didn't. But they'll be players for anyone on the buyout market. Like, the one everyone's waiting for. When's Andre Iguodala going to get bought out by the Grizzlies? And it's probably going to come down to the Lakers or Clippers for him, is what his decision's going to be. So we'll just kind of have to wait and see how that plays out.
I think he will be a difference maker.
Oh, if he ended up with the Lakers, he absolutely would be. But the Clippers could swoop in and take him right away.
I think he would make the Lakers way better than he would make the Clippers way better, just because I think the Clippers already have Kawhi, they have Paul George. I like Montrezl Harrell. I know you're not as big of a fan. But I think they have the defensive characteristics, whereas the Lakers do not have defense. And that's something where he would all really help. All right, I guess we're in prediction time. Who do you like coming out of the East? Who do you like coming out of the West? Who do you like winning? Any other things you want to call out as you do your season prediction here?
Start in the West. I think the Clippers showed last night that they're the team that come out of the West. 11-point win at home in the season opener. Paul George still isn't playing.
Yep.
And then come playoff time, when you can integrate him into with Kawhi Leonard is far and away the best player in the National Basketball Association right now. He proved that last night.
Yeah, he's at a different level.
He absolutely proved that last night. So you add Paul George into that mix, they're going to add some. They're going to add an Andre Iguodala type off the buyout market. They do have the ability to go out and make a deal if they feel the need to. I think the Clippers, they're not your number one seed in the West, but they come out of the West.
Okay.
And they're your West representative in the NBA Finals.
Who are they facing off against?
You give me your West first.
I have the Clippers, too.
You do?
Yeah, I have the Clippers, too. Okay. It was well stated. I'm a huge Kawhi fan.
For all intents and purposes, after that, who do the Clippers beat in the Western Conference Finals?
I think they beat the Warriors.
I like the Warriors this year.
I actually do see the Clippers as the one seed. Denver is the two. Warriors is the three. Warriors get past Denver and then beat the Clippers. The Clippers beat the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. That's how I see it going down.
Okay. You do your East first.
In the East, I like the Philadelphia 76ers.
Patrick.
Oh, man, dude. They're
you don't like them. Don't say the words, I like
they
them.
They are stacked. They are stacked. Embiid, Simmons, Harris, Richardson, Horford. I mean, that is a loaded team. Now, depth, it's a question. I know we called this out in our offseason pod. What are they going to do off the bench? But honestly, like, losing Redick, I think they have an upgrade from losing Redick. And I just think the East is super weak, and I don't think there's any team that can challenge the Sixers. So I like the Sixers coming out of the East. But I will say that I like the Celtics over the Bucks in the Eastern Conference Semis, and I actually see the Sixers over the Celtics, the rejuvenated Celtics, in the Eastern Conference Finals, and unfortunately we just don't have an answer for Horford and Embiid, and that's why we lose, but it's okay. We can reload and compete next year. So, you haven't even gotten your Sixers rant, so you could probably do it now and then tell me your Eastern Conference pick.
It's tough for me to go on a Sixers rant because, yes, Pat, on paper, they're the most talented team in the Eastern Conference. Paper tells me that the Philadelphia 76ers should absolutely 100% of any team in the Eastern Conference be in the NBA Finals.
Yes, I agree.
Okay? Just something... we talked about this, I think, off-pod before we even got going. about Al Horford. As much as we love Al, we wish Al was still here. We wish Al was starting at center for us tonight. Was Al starting to break down a little bit last year?
He was.
Yes, he probably was. So my question to you, when you look at the starting five for the Sixers last year, you essentially swapped out Jimmy Butler
and J.J. Redick.
And J.J. Redick for Al Horford and Josh Richardson.
Yes.
I will say I think they're going to stagger Horford minutes with Embiid minutes.
Yeah, they will.
So I think Embiid will play 30 minutes and Horford will play 22 minutes. So I think they will not be pushing Horford the way that the Celtics kind of had to.
Is Joel Embiid in better shape now than he was last season? Yes. By all intents and purposes,
we're going to find out.
People are saying it's true. People are actually saying it's true. And yes, we have to see it once they take the floor and heck, I don't even know what time it is, but whatever.
Half hour.
But is Joel Embiid still like a go-to guy, like down the stretch in an NBA game? Because Jimmy Butler played that role significantly for this team in the playoffs last year. Why did they get to Game 7 against the Raptors? It was because of Jimmy Butler. They didn't replace Jimmy Butler with anyone close to Jimmy Butler. Now, Ben Simmons takes that leap. I'm not saying he's going to develop the jump shot that he... I mean, yeah. Can we just sidebar quickly? Did you see that embarrassment when he hit that wide open three the end of the half? They were celebrating like they won the NBA title.
He gets paid $20 million a year to play basketball.
Pat, that's the celebration the fat kid in CYO gets when he makes a basket in middle school league that they gave him when he hit that three. If that should tell you anything about what they think about Ben Simmons, Simmons's outside shooting ability, it's just...
He is still an all-star without being able to shoot. And I don't think he's going to shoot this season. And they're paying him like he will learn how to shoot. I don't see it either. But you can't... I mean, Josh Richardson's a really good player.
He is. No, he is. Two-way, too. Good defensively as well.
Everyone
forgets about Harris. Even me.
He's a great player.
Listen, he's not a great player.
He's a great player.
Just because you're a max player in today's NBA doesn't mean you're a great player.
I don't give a shit
about that. I fall short of calling him a great player, but okay. I'll admit I'm the first one to forget about Tobias Harris when I think about the Sixers. I mean, he's that guy who has that sneaky, crazy playoff game, you know, in a run, who goes for like 40 points in a game, in a key game, in a swing game of a series. There's so many question marks with them still. That's coming up. Also, from the coaching standpoint.
Okay, I agree with you.
I don't trust a Brett Brown. Like, if Brad Stevens was the head coach of the 76ers, or if Greg Popovich was the coach of the 76ers, or even if Doc Rivers, if someone like that, was the head coach of the Philadelphia 76ers, I'd have a little bit more faith in the Philadelphia 76ers. But I'm not sold on Brett Brown, the head coach.
Two years ago,
when the Celtics made the Eastern Conference Finals, when Irving and Hayward were out, should the Celtics have lost to that team?
The Sixers. Yeah,
the Sixers? Especially in the way they did, in the five games?
It's brutal, yeah.
It's still the same coach. It's still the same guy. Yes, he has better players. I'm just not sure.
Yeah, I agree that Brett Brown could definitely throw this sideways. Elton Brand had a decent offseason, but I still question the amount they gave up for Harris. I mean, imagine Landry Shamet still on the Sixers team. He's starting for the Clippers.
Yep.
He's starting for the team that's favored to win the NBA Finals. Did you really have to include him in that Tobias trade? So I still question, like, will Graham be able to pull the strings midseason and get something done? Okay, so I take it you're not picking the Sixers to go to these.
Well, that's the thing. I just realized I still owe you an answer. The problem is, Pat, I don't like Milwaukee that much either, because I think they've gotten worse. I don't think they're as good. They lost. I mean, they traded... Brogdon away, which I think that's going to hurt them more than they anticipated. They lost Mirotić, who was one of their best scorers, best, you know, outside shooting threats off the bench. Yes, they brought back George Hill. You know, Eric Bledsoe's like this. I know people can't hear me, but what am I doing right now, Pat?
You're doing
going
it up and down.
I'm going up and down.
Curve, yes.
That's Eric Bledsoe. I don't have an Easter Conference. I think on paper, Pat, on paper, like if I had to pick someone, gun to my head,
the fucking Celtics.
No, it would be the Sixers.
Okay.
But I just think there's too many.
You're agreeing with my pick then.
But there's just too many question marks attached to them, and I think that's the point you make about the Eastern Conference. But Pat, I think it could be any one of four teams. It could be the Sixers. It could be the Bucks. It could be the Celtics. Pat, it could be the Toronto Raptors.
It won't be the Raptors. It won't be the Raptors.
They're a team that's been together the longest of any of the teams constituted together. Yes, there's no Kawhi Leonard, but I talked about this. The Raptors, they played very, very well, had a very, very good record, even without Kawhi Leonard last year. It could be any one of those four teams. It's just going to be how teams are playing come playoff time.
You have a pick.
What's the health of playoff
time? Do you have a pick?
I gave it to you. I said the Sixers.
Okay, he's agreeing. We both have Sixers Clippers. It's boring.
But almost like reverse psychology Jedi mind trick.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what you Jedi mind trick. We both have the Clippers winning, presumably.
Yes.
Does that make Kawhi top 10 player of all time to have been the best player of the Spurs?
Probably.
Raptors and Clippers?
Yeah.
It's pretty wild.
I think so.
To have beaten LeBron with the Cavs, to have beaten LeBron with the Heat, Steph with the Warriors, and then all the stat teams in the West. We haven't even talked about Harden and Westbrook with the Rockets, which is a whole other thing to look out for. Very interesting. We're not going to have time for my J.J. Redick story, but my quick highlight of former six-year current Pelican J.J. Redick is we ran into him in Austin 2 weekends ago, and I was manning the Papa Shot machine right before I saw him at a place called Unbarlievable on Rainy Street in Austin. Ask Ryan Durkin, he will second that this happened.
I will.
So put up the high score. I would say in the power rankings, I would put your brother Chris number one in my people I know Papa Shot power rankings, but I think I'm a pretty strong two seed. Like, I think I have a pretty good Papa Shot game down. So put up 94, which was the high score. We were moving on to the next bar. I leave right when J.J. Redick walks in. No joke. And there's a long line. So to get back in, I would have had to wait in line. But in hindsight, I'm wondering, should I have just hung out around the Papa Shot machine and seen if J.J. and his boys went over to the Papa Shot machine? And then, I don't know, maybe there's something there.
Boston College Mike and Pat. Mike is telling Boston College Pat, yes, you absolutely should.
And I think J.J. Redick is a better basketball player than me and a better three-point shooter than me, but I might be a better Papa Shot player than him. I like Papa Shot more than J.J. Redick plays Papa Shot. So anyways, I missed the moment. I did really like him. My senior in high school, I think, before I went to BC.
And then that all died, right?
And then that quickly flipped. Anyways, that's my J.J. Redick story. All right, we did a lot of basketball talk there.
We did.
A full hour.
It was good.
That's a good preview. Now you know about the Celtics. You know about who we like in the East and the West. Shockingly, we both have the Clippers over the Sixers, which is crazy. We did not talk about this beforehand. But let's pivot a little bit. And in honor of the 50th episode, in honor of being on the Boston College campus earlier today.
Or at least close to it.
Yeah, where we spent 4 great years and now in Cleveland Circle, so not too far away. You want to kick off this segment?
Yeah. So I texted Pat a couple days ago, what can we do for episode 50 to make it just a little bit different? So I decided what we'll do is we will we'll break these memories up into which dorm we lived at. So for those of you that don't know, Pat and I were direct roommates all 4 years of college. We lived in 4 different dorms in our 4 years at BC. So we're going to separate our best, we're going to give you our top sports memories, and these can be good or bad. They're not necessarily all good things that we witnessed while residents of each respective dorm at Boston College. So we're going to start with freshman year. It was.
How do you want to do this? Do you want to? We each do our top. You want to alternate? Like How do you want to do it?
So someone will give their top.
Okay.
All right. And then what we'll do is, I have a feeling that I have enough here where if you give one, I'm going to give a different one. Just because I think there was at least more than one all 4 years.
Okay. So we're each going to end up giving our top.
We're going to give our top. But I think the person that goes second can mention some of the honorable mentions that went on as well. Just so we touch on everything. Because there's a whole lot of sports memories on my little card here that I put together.
You have a card. I have it in my app that I'm also recording on. So I'll get creative on this. All right, why don't you lead the way then?
All right, we're going to start off with the Medeiros townhouses.
Ooh,
the most awkward dorm.
Freshman year.
The most awkward dorm on BC Upper Campus. It's kind of like the redheaded stepchild of dorms because it's set up differently. When we were there, it was an all-guys dorm.
It was all-guys.
Right? I actually laughed out loud because when we had that like fake nor'easter last week, it actually knocked power out in some of the buildings in BC off. And Medeiros was like the lone dormitory that had power knocked out. And I said it would happen in Medeiros. It would happen where we lived in. Well, I think number one and two, I'm going to say one and you're going to say the other. I think we have to separate them.
Okay, let's go.
Number one certainly has to be the Red Sox comeback in the ALCS against the Yankees. Yes, that was our freshman year. Red Sox down 3-0.
Three games to nothing.
We actually made, even from game one on, we made that a... That was one of the top game watches. But the common room of Medeiros A was one of the top places or common area places to watch the Red Sox-Yankee games.
I agree with that.
Watch game one, watch game two, the Red Sox lost. Game three, I think... We went to Fenway
we went
and
to
watched
Uno's.
The Pizzeria Uno.
It's terrible.
We all know how game three went. And then the game four game watch, it started with me sitting all alone by myself in the common room in my little folding chair.
You had more faith than me.
I was all by myself at the beginning of that game, sitting in my gray Red Sox t-shirt that had like the metallic, rubbery looking lettering. You remember it, right?
I do remember
it. Yep. A shirt that I wore every day for the next... However long the rest of that World Series run of the World Series went. But what started in that game four with me sitting all by myself in the common room morphed into quite a big group until the Red Sox walked it off in game four. And then the rest of that, every game watched there on end. They were packed, the room was packed with people watching every single game. And every game, obviously, ending in a post-game celebration running around upper campus like crazy.
It was wild. It was wild. Yeah, I'd say... Game 7 ALCS is probably my top moment.
Sorry, I grouped the whole ALCS together.
No, it's fine. It's worthy of grouping.
It was really a whole experience.
And it's funny that, like, you know, we won the World Series, but no, we're both reflecting on the ALCS. And there are also a ton of Yankee fans at BC, so it was good to, you know, be able to shove it in their face.
Oh, my God, the
bit.
Tears that you saw people.
It was great.
The tears.
It was great.
Because everyone knew from, what, the fourth inning on in Game 7?
Yeah.
That the Red Sox were certainly going to win.
That was awesome.
Oh.
Yeah, I had my spot right in the corner, threw my hat way too many times to count. It was way too intense. Met my now wife in those game watches, and she somehow endured and saw through that side of me to get to where we are today. So yeah, I would agree, Game 7 ALCS. I mean, if I got to do honorable mentions, I'd say the World Series, sweeping the Cardinals was pretty amazing. And I would also say, you know, we won the Super Bowl that year. I remember the AFC Championship win over the Pittsburgh Steelers, and then the Super Bowl win over the Philadelphia Eagles would both be highlights for me as well.
Because this is mainly a Celtics podcast, Pat, I got to bring up at least one Celtics memory. So you may I know you don't forget, but a lot of people
Everyone
might forget.
Everyone should forget this.
But this was the year that the Celtics reacquired Antoine Walker halfway through the season.
It's not
right?
a highlight.
Remember that? It was
a highlight. It's not a highlight.
Celtics were the 3 seed in the Eastern Conference playoffs that year, playing the Pacers, who were the 6 seed. Now, we've talked countless times, but Pat and I went to Game 7 at TD Garden, or whatever it was called at the time.
Terrible.
Celtics got their asses kicked by the Pacers. But in keeping with it had to be games that we actually watched physically in these dorms, Celtic-Pacers Game 6, Pat, I don't know if you remember, the Celtics ended up winning this game. This was also the game Paul Pierce got tossed out of for elbowing Jamal Tinsley in the face. And he did the post-game press conference with his like head wrapped in the bandage. This was immature Paul Pierce before Paul Pierce grew up a little bit and became the 2008 NBA champion and had his number retired in TD Garden, Paul Pierce. That game 6 was a lot of fun, if I remember. I remember being quite intoxicated watching it. And I think as soon as the game was over, you and I bought tickets to Game 7.
We did.
Back in the day when you bought tickets on the Celtics website, on Ticketmaster.
We did do that. I can't believe you're comparing this in any way, shape, or form of ALCS.
I'm not comparing.
Super Bowl.
It's a distant honorable mention.
It's very distant.
It's a distant honorable mention.
Very distant.
Just because we are mainly a Celtic topic podcast, I do need to bring up something Celtic related. And it's a fun memory to think
it's
about.
A fun
the Game 6 was fun. Game 7, not so much.
I'd say, if I had to flip to the negative side of things to close this one out, I guess the most negative memory was BC had a pretty solid basketball team that year. We started out 20-0. We were number 3 in the country. Struggled to the end of the year. I think we finished 25-5. Smoked Penn the first game of the NCAA tournament, and then got upset by Wisconsin Milwaukee.
Who's the coach of that Wisconsin Milwaukee team?
Bruce Pearl. and that prevented us from reaching the Sweet 16. And that was a pretty strong team that year.
Wow.
That was probably my low moment, expecting this to be a Sweet 16 team and not actually making it. Honorable mention was game one and game two of the ALCS that Mike already talked about a little bit, when Mike Mussina and John Lieber outdueled Kurt Schilling and Pedro Martinez. I think they both helped carry like perfect games or no hitters into like the seventh inning of both games. So those are some of the low moments, but clearly, like, I think ALCS game seven is the highlight by far, like 86 years and everything else about that one.
I mean, it made the World Series. Like, it's amazing how the World Series was less anticlimactic than the ALCS was. But yeah, it's tough to kind of beat that year as we move through here. We have some good
Senior
ones as we move
too.
Forward.
Senior year is
good too, but you could argue freshman year was the best.
Yeah.
For that reason.
Do you want me to kick off sophomore year?
Yes, sir.
All right. So sophomore year, we lived in Walsh Hall. Does it still exist today?
Still exists.
Somehow
still looks exactly the same.
Probably won't exist for too long.
Yeah, two of our managers live in Walsh 605.
No way.
We lived in Walsh 603.
That's very close.
So
eight-man dorm, so we had six of us over with Mike and I. I struggled a little bit this in finding the top moment. We'll see what you have. This is one that I watched and Mike didn't, but we were playing Wake Forest in football our sophomore year. Mike was at the game, I bet.
Yeah.
I went for the first half. It was a monsoon. We were getting our ass kicked. Quinn Porter was doing a terrible job at quarterback. So I left at halftime to go back to our dorm. They brought this kid, Matt Ryan, in, and he led them I think we were down like 10 or 9 with like 3 minutes left, and he led us on some crazy comeback that involved an onside kick and multiple touchdowns in the last minute. And that was the first we got a sense. First time, really, I think I got a sense like, hey, this quarterback could be something pretty special. So, relatively light year for me in terms of top BC memories, but that would be one I would put at the top.
In fairness, Pat, I think I didn't get there till halftime of that game, so that's why I was there for the second half.
I was
working women's basketball. We had a scrimmage, but I stuck it out to the end.
You did.
There were people out there without rain jackets and their super fan T-shirts. You would never see that today.
No,
but anyway, I was witnessed that in person. It was a lot of fun. Games that we actually witnessed within the walls of the dorm.
I witnessed the second half of that game in the dorm. That's why.
Oh,
I'm
talking about me specifically. Okay. Me specifically. That's why that one doesn't count for me.
I hope you don't have 06 Celtics references, because that team sucks.
Weren't many memories of that. I think there's like the one good Celtic memory that year was, I think, Paul Pierce had a game winner against the Wizards on the road, but the Celtics didn't make the playoffs that year, so it doesn't matter.
Congrats. Nice job, Paul.
We're going to go back to BC men's basketball. Their second round win against the University of Pacific. Okay? I think BC beat Montana in the first round.
They did.
And then they beat Pacific. I think Montana was their site. Like, they got a real crappy site. I think they were the 4 seed in that region. So they beat Montana, and then they beat Pacific in double overtime. 88-76. I remember the game tipped like at 12:30. It was like 12:30, 1 o'clock Eastern. So what was it Mountain Time? They had to have tipped like at 11 a.m.
I think this is our first round game, actually. We beat Montana after, because you were going to class, right?
Oh, that's right.
It was a Thursday or a Friday.
Pacific was the first round. Montana was the second round. You're right.
It was Thursday.
Yep. You know what, Pat? I stand corrected.
So that would have been a horrible first round exit.
It was, because I watched the Montana game in West Lafayette, Indiana.
Okay.
When I was out for the Women's Sweet 16.
Yeah.
So there we go.
There we go.
Thanks for the fact check, Pat.
There we go.
First round against Pacific. So BC was trailing most of this game. They're like, oh, here we are again. We have this great team. We're going to lose. Came back one in double overtime. And what I remember vividly most about it is a lot of people had 3 o'clock classes that day. And everybody walked in a half hour late, because everybody was watching the game in double overtime. And the teachers, for the most part, understood why everyone was late. So it wasn't
awesome.
It wasn't a big deal. But what a great team that was. Craig Smith, Jared Dudley, Sean Marshall.
Tyrese Rice that year.
I mean, unfortunately, lost to Villanova the next round.
Which is the low light for me.
Which is the low light for you, yes.
60-59.
Six,
overtime loss. They didn't cover, was it Sheridan?
Right.
Down
pass.
Yeah. We had our brothers there. Fun night, but just crushing loss that...
My brother was there. I was in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Oh, you weren't there.
I wasn't there. So I was in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
It only counts for me. Yeah, that would be my low moment, that Villanova loss that would have put us to the Elite Eight for the first time since 1994. Just a terrible rock fight of a game that no team could... And that Villanova team was quite good. They had Kyle Lowry. They had Randy Foy. They had Alan Ray. They had a big guy, too. I forget his name.
Mike Nardi. Yep.
Dante Cunningham. They were a good team.
They were a very good team.
But that was probably my low moment, losing that one. Do you have any other low ones or high ones?
I found in the Walsh year, Pat, there was more lows than highs. This was probably the worst year of them all.
We weren't back when the Pats lost to Denver, were we?
No.
It was right around the time.
Oh, you know what? I didn't watch that in Walsh. I watched that in Vanderslice, actually.
So you were back up there.
Yeah, I was in Pearsall's room with all his roommates and stuff. But another low light I want to say was obviously the entirety of that Red Sox series. So it was the year after winning the World Series. I lost to the White Sox in 3. White Sox obviously went on to win the World Series. Game 3, it was a close game. It was like the only close game of the series. It was Game 3 at Fenway. The elimination game. White Sox ended up winning. There was only one bright spot of that game, Pat. It was the birth of Jonathan Papelbon, the reliever.
Oh, that's true.
I don't know if you remember, he came in and he actually shut the White Sox. Red Sox were trailing at the time, but I think he shut them down for at least 2 innings. And that was kind of the beginning of Jonathan Papelbon, the relief pitcher for the Red Sox. And obviously we know what Papelbon went on to do in the 07 World Series. So. Right. But I think why that's also a damper for those part two is like we just won the World Series.
Yeah.
The Red Sox were no longer king of the baseball world. And when we had, you know, hadn't savored that for the entirety of our lives, that was kind of just bitter to finally give up.
Yeah. That's true. All right, tell me about junior year. Saint Ignatius game.
You know, I'll be honest, Pat. I said that Walsh is probably the worst. You're in the gate. Sports-wise, wasn't great either. Celtics still sucked. Red Sox didn't make the playoffs that year, I don't think, if I remember correctly. No one cares about the Bruins.
No, we don't know. I got a good highlight.
I'm going to give the two negatives. Then I have two negatives written down, so I'll give them. First one, obviously, was the Pats lost to the Colts in the AFC Championship after being up, what was it, 21-3? 21-3. Had a lead on Peyton Manning and the Colts in Indianapolis. Ended up losing that game. Colts go to the Super Bowl, win the Super Bowl.
I didn't eat Papa John's for 10 years after that moment.
I got another pretty bad Patriots game that year as well. They lost to the Jets at Gillette Stadium, 17-14. Eric Mangini was the head coach of the Jets.
Yeah.
And this was obviously right before the whole Spygate thing came out.
Yeah.
It's kind of where the whole Spygate thing kind of came, you know, started taking to fruition.
Good?
Doing good, thank you.
Good, yeah, I think I'll still nibble a little bit.
Would you like another beer?
Good for now.
Okay.
Thank you.
It was kind of like the seeds of Spygate had been planted.
Yeah.
Patriots lose to the Jets 17-14 at Gillette Stadium. Eric Mangini, it was pouring rain. Like, this was a game where the Patriots were far and away the favorites.
Yeah.
The Jets had no business winning this game. They came in and beat the Patriots in Foxborough when we were at a point where we weren't accustomed to that happening. So there were a couple of real crappy losses that year for the Patriots.
Yeah. My highlight was going to be the Patriots' second-round win against the Chargers. Marty Schottenheim. I think it was the number one seed Chargers. I think they were like 13-3 that year or something like that.
That might have been the game where the Patriots were the biggest underdog. Like, if any time they were an underdog in the playoffs, it was probably that.
And we got wildly outplayed, down by, I think, 8 with 5 minutes left. And on a fourth down play, Brady throws a pick. But Troy Brown somehow strips. Like, all the Chargers had to do was not catch it, and they would have got the ball. Instead, he picks it, tries to return it. Troy Brown strips it. We get the ball back. We go down. We score. We direct snap the two-point conversion to Kevin Falk. And we don't even win in overtime. We win in regulation because I think the Chargers go 3-0. I think that was Rivers, right?
Yes, I believe
that
so.
That was Rivers. I think it was Rivers and not Breeze. So we end up winning that game, and that was like we were, there was a steal in a big way. I think that led to Schottenheimer getting fired, but of course, all the air came out of the sails after losing to the Colts the next week. The other exciting thing that happened that year, which I don't think we were in the dorm for, was BC won the bowl game against Navy on a last second field goal.
Yes,
Steve Epinophagus.
I was home. I was home in my living room in Andover.
Yeah, doesn't count. Okay.
That was when Frank Spaziani was the interim head coach, right?
Yep. All right, senior year, you get to kick this one off. We have too many memories for this one.
Too many memories. I mean, I'm going to start with the big one. And I'm going to combine two because it happened on the same night. There were two huge games going on. BC was ranked what in the country?
We were number two.
Number two in the country. In Blacksburg at Lane Stadium against Virginia Tech. They were trailing 10-0 in this game, I think, from like the middle of the first quarter on, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
At the same time, however, as this game was going on, Game 2 of the World Series, Red Sox-Rockies, was going on at Fenway Park. Pat, I tell this story to people all the time. I did not, I don't think you did either, watched a single pitch of Game 2 of the World Series.
It was either Game 1 or 2.
It was two.
It was Beckett, though, right?
Yeah, it was Beckett. We did not watch a single pitch of a World Series game because it was BC football.
Second TV.
I don't think we did.
We had two TVs. We did.
I thought Gene like said something like, we're not watching baseball. We're watching football.
We had two TVs, but we didn't didn't really watch the baseball.
Oh, okay. I don't remember watching a pitch of it. Maybe it's just because I was so focused on the football game. But anyway, we all know what happened. BC's down with 2 minutes left, 10-0. A miraculous comeback led by Matt Ryan. The go-ahead touchdown, the pass to Andre Callender in the end zone. Campus went crazy after that win.
Yeah.
People running around the mods, running around lower campus. Like, that was probably the most fun to be a BC student, a BC sports fan as a BC student. Red Sox also won game two of the World Series against the Rockies that night, but it was overshadowed by the big BC win. So I think that night has to take the cake as far as senior year.
That's my number one. There's a lot of honorable mentions here, though. So the Patriots won the Super Bowl against the... No, they didn't.
No, that's a bad one, which we'll talk about soon.
Yeah, I was looking at the freshman year one. I'm like, they beat the Eagles.
We need to talk about how terrible that was in the moment. Yep.
So the other highlights, one was on the day before we graduated. We had a Game 7. Celtics first.
Game 7.
Game 7. Celtics Cavaliers.
Right, Game 7.
Pierce Garnett-Allen against LeBron James, which was if you watch the Harvard Classic or ESPN Classic, NBA TV, whatever you call it these days, that game was so stressful because Pierce and LeBron were going back and forth, and it took mid-season waiver wire pickup buyout guy, P.J. Brown, hitting two clutch shots in the last few minutes to put the Celtics over the Cavs. Pierce won a loose ball against LeBron.
Pierce went for, 41? LeBron finished with 45,
I think LeBron was 45, Pierce was 41.
Yeah.
But they needed every one of those points to get LeBron, and that's when I think we knew LeBron was something special. So that's on my list. BC Hockey won the national title.
Yep.
That's on my list. Red Sox won the World Series. We had our most rambunctious NFL draft prediction game.
Oh, yeah. This was back when it was just me, Pat, and Gene. We held it in our dorm room.
We're all tied with two picks to go, and the Packers trade their pick to the Jets at number 30 and 30 because the Patriots weren't going at 32. And I had the Packers taking a tight end for some reason, and the Jets somehow, instead of taking the secondary that I think you and Gene had, they ended up taking a tight end, which puts me to win. And now I wear my Dustin Keller jersey every time we bring this back.
Pat went crazy, and Gene and I were so incredulous that our friends that lived below us in Voûte thought something was like seriously wrong up in our room because of the reaction.
Yeah, that Dustin Keller mention was probably one of my top 10 BC highlights, which may be depressing to think about my BC experience, but it was awesome.
Well, we're on the NFL draft, Pat. I looked up some stuff from that draft that was fun. So, the 2008 draft, so that was obviously the Spygate year. So, the Patriots lost their first round pick as penalty from the NFL for Spygate.
For not doing anything, but keep going.
But they still had one first round pick that had belonged to the San Francisco 49ers that they got because in the year before, the 49ers wanted to trade back into the late first round to select Joe Staley, offensive tackle,
not a bad pick.
Which was pick 28.
Good pick.
Little did the 49ers know that they were going to be really shitty the next year. That pick for the Patriots ended up being number 7. So the Patriots started that draft with number 7. They ended up trading it along with a later pick back for pick number 7, pick number 10, and another later round pick. With that number 10 pick, they selected Gerard Mayo, which is a very good pick. Obviously the anchor, the play caller, the Patriot defense for years.
Now currently
the play caller as on the coaching side of the Patriots. I also wanted to go through the rest of that Patriots draft with you. All right? Just because I thought it was fun. With their lone second round pick, they took Terrence Wheatley.
Zero.
Defensive back.
Zero.
They had 2 third round picks. Their first third round pick, Sean Crable, linebacker from Michigan.
Not a good one.
Nope. Their second third round pick, Kevin O'Connell, quarterback. Well, I think isn't he now the Redskins like offensive coordinator?
So. Yeah. And we had high hopes for him.
And they're saying could be like the next head coach of the Redskins possibly.
We had high hopes for him.
He did
nothing.
Fourth round pick was another cornerback, Jonathan Wilhite.
Yeah, never even heard of him.
This was a really bad draft for the Patriots. The next one I'm about to say, this was the bright spot. Mayo was a bright spot.
Yeah.
There were only two good picks in this entire draft. In the fifth round, the Patriots took Matthew Slater.
Great pick.
Who is still on the team today. Special teams captain.
Great pick.
Probably one of the best special teamers in the NFL. And then in the sixth round, they took Bo Rude, linebacker from Nebraska.
I remember that guy. So did he even make the team?
That is your 2008 Patriots draft.
Not our best.
So four of them, all but two of those guys aren't even in the league anymore.
Mayo and Slater are the best guys there.
But that just shows you how the Patriots can really swing and miss on drafts sometimes. That was certainly one of those years. Mayo and Slater aside, other than that, it was a disaster.
Yeah, those are terrible.
Absolute disaster.
Belichick can't take quarterbacks for his life. Although McCourty's turned out pretty damn well.
I think the other low light, obviously, is
the
Patriots losing the Super Bowl to the Giants after going undefeated. I think what made that even worse, despite the fact that, you know, obviously the Patriots were undefeated and heavy favorites, that a lot of our friends that we blocked with the Event Hall were all Giant fans.
Too
were from
many.
New York. Everyone had coats to their room, so they were rushing in, celebrating. They're playing New York on loop at Marianne's, which... You know, I hate that I like New York, the song so much.
I don't.
That it's such a good song.
I don't.
Because it's supposed to bring up bad memories. But anyway, so that's our year in Voute Hall in a nutshell. But you see a lot of highlights and then some really high highlights and some terrible lowlights that year.
Yeah, that was the big one. I mean, the other one I have was we lost. After beating Virginia Tech, we ended up losing to them in the ACC Championship game, which would have been a good way to go to a BCS Bowl, so that was disappointing. But, you know, you're reflecting on that. It's a lot of fucking good memories.
Oh, a lot of great ones.
We had a good run.
The bad ones, there are some good stories that come out of it.
Across both professional and college, we had a 04 to 08 is a pretty good run there. So... I guess to close out in our last minute or two, we spent some time talking about the Patriots draft and Gerard Mayo. 7-0 Patriots. Any quick final thoughts? I mean, this team just continues to deliver wins. We're two decades into this unbelievable run right now, and I know I'm appreciating every play because it won't last forever. This doesn't feel like an undefeated season to me.
No.
The schedule gets much tougher in the second half. I think they'll get by the Browns, but I think the second half of the year does get more challenging.
Yep.
Baltimore, I think in week 9 will be a tough one. Philly in week 11 shouldn't be an issue, but once we see KC, there's some tough teams down the stretch. So to me it feels like a 14-2 season, but again, this team is extremely well positioned to make... This would be what? Would this be 5... Think 5 Super Bowls in 6 years they would make? Or 4 and 5? I forget. I mean, this is the run of success is unprecedented.
It is.
The defense is like nothing I've seen before.
No, this is a historically good defense. I think, you know, a lot of people can pinpoint all the opponents. I think regardless of the opponents, this defense is the team. I think you're going to see that beginning this week against the Browns team, which isn't great, but is better than what they've been playing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you hit it right in the head. The schedule's about to get much more difficult. The Browns, the Ravens, the Cowboys, the Eagles. Not NFL elite by any chance, but a step above what they've been playing.
And the Chiefs.
And you get in the Kansas Cities and the Houston Texans.
Yeah.
You know, the schedule...
There's a couple of losses on the schedule, in my view.
The schedule's going to get tougher.
Yeah.
But a historically good defense that I think is going to carry them. And we'll see how the offense gels now with Josh Gordon going on IR. obviously the adding of Mohamed Sanu. I think, you know, you say it doesn't feel like an undefeated season, and part of that is because a lot of the first half of the year, despite the assessment, overshadowed by the Antonio Brown saga. I think a lot of that is unfortunate with how it played off, I think, on both ends, both parties involved. I'm of the opinion that I think he should still be here. He should still be on this roster, football-wise. Nothing's materializing quickly in the investigation. I'm not saying he's innocent. I'm not saying he's a good human being. He's not. But as far as, like, you know, what we want this team to go, and I think Tom Brady would agree with this, and I think Brady's dropped a lot of hints, whether in the media or whether on Instagram. He'd like to see Antonio Brown on this roster, too. But it's not going to happen. So we got to put that to bed.
I mean, what he said to Robert Kraft, and then, of course, what he said to his accuser over Twitter is just something that the team cannot tolerate, and nor should they. So, you know, he wore out his welcome.
And that's why I say that it's unfortunate, because he should still be, because he makes decisions that are silly, and because I think the Patriots were a little bit quick on the the release trigger a little bit. It makes things a little bit more difficult for Brady. But hey, enter Mohamed Sanu. Let's see how he does. He's now your number two receiver, you know, outside of Edelman. You're going to add N'Keal Harry, you know, to this receiving core in a couple weeks. I'm kind of excited to see how it comes together. But again, it's a great start to a Patriots season. I think they're going to keep it going. It's just unfortunate that, you know, off-field situation kind of has to, you know, put a cloud over it. And you know, hopefully that goes away with each passing week.
Well, the upside with Sanu as well is that now they have both Julian Edelman and Mohamed Sanu who can do the receiver pass. So if I had to bet over and under 0.5 Tom Brady pass targets in his direction, I'm taking the over, because you know they got a trick play lined up now for either Edelman or Sanu to be throwing a pass to TB12, and I know he wants to make up for what happened in the Super Bowl a few years back and the Eagles lost. So
we have
that going for us. Alrighty, good stuff. Well, looks like we're about to get started here in Philadelphia. Any predictions for the tip-off here, Celtics Sixers? Both teams, you know, a little bit different looks than what we've seen in the past.
I think you're going to see a Celtic team that shares the ball an awful lot more than last year's Celtics did. I think that has to do with the personnel the Celtics are putting out the floor. It's a tough matchup for them tonight with Embiid and Horford, you know, in the middle. More so on the Embiid side, you know, than the Horford side. I don't think the Sixers have anyone that can guard Kemba Walker. I see a big Celtic debut for Kemba Walker tonight. It's going to be a close game down to the wire. Because I'm a homer, I'm going Celtics 105, Sixers 103.
Alrighty. He sticks to his guns, and, you know, honestly, the last 7 years, I think the Celtics are what, like 23 out of 25 or something like that against the Sixers? It's some crazy stat. I think I got the Sixers winning tonight, so... I think the Sixers just have more continuity. The Celtics are just going to have to take some time getting used to playing together. And I think home court advantage is the decider. Sixers by 3. But, again, first game of the season doesn't dictate the rest of the season. I'm excited to see what Hayward's got. I'm excited to see if Brown and Tatum can make the leap. And I want to see who's going to play center for us. So that's going to be a good learning process as well.
And I can't wait for the Sixers to drop Kentucky and celebrate like they won the NBA Finals if they win tonight.
Let's just hope they don't drop it too early.
Yeah.
On that note, thank you, audience. Episode 50 in the books. Enjoy this NBA season. We'll have many updates coming in the weeks and months ahead. And let's do this.